જન તમે નંદલકયા ચક્ષુસ્મિલસ્મય શ્રી રવે નમઃ શ્રી ચૈતન્ય મનોવિષ્ટં સ્થપિતાં દેન ભૂતલે સ્વયં પ્રકજામયં દદતિ સા પદંતિકમ્. વંશકપતુભ્યશ્ચ કૃપસિંધુભૈ પ્રતિતનં પાવનેભ્યો વૈષ્ણવેભ્યો નમો નમઃ. We've been hearing about Indra's dealings, how he offended Brihaspati, his spiritual master, who disappeared and would not allow Indra to see him to apologize. Understanding that the demigods therefore were in a weak position, the demons, under the strong authority of their spiritual master Sukracharya, attacked the demigods and inflicted great difficulty and pain upon them. They, the demigods, then went to get some solace and instructions from Lord Brahma, who told them to take shelter of Vishwarupa, the son of Tvastha and Rachana, as spiritual master, and by the austerities or the power of Vishwarupa, they would be able to get their ends met, which was to subdue the demons. So Indra and the demigods went to Vishwarupa and begged him to begged him to become the priest and their priest and protect them and by his strength guide them to defeat the demons. And Vishwarupa did that, and he created a Narayan Kavacha, a great protective shield based on taking shelter of Lord Narayan, of saying mantras and decorating one's body with Narayan mantras. And by taking shelter of the Lord, Lord Narayan, then the demigods became very successful. Now the basic theme in this entire canto is one of poshanam, or protection of the Lord, or the Lord's protection upon those who take shelter of Him. And in this world, how much is everyone requiring protection? Prabhupada will quote one verse spoken by Lord Brahma from the 10th canto, Samasritam ye parapalava plavam Mahatpadam punyayasho murare Bhavam buddhir vatsapadam parampadam Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. Vipadam means very dangerous. There are so many dangers in the material world. This world is full of dangers. And we dream that everything will go smoothly, but it's only a dream, it's an illusion, it's imaginary. Something goes wrong, it must go wrong. We don't understand material reality, dukalayama shashvatam, until we understand that. And the material world, it is certified by Krishna as dukalayama shashvatam, anitya, asukam, lokam. It's a place of that's temporary, anitya, and it's full of miseries because we are searching for a perfect solution, but in this world there can be no perfect solution. The perfect solution is taking shelter and seeking protection and reawakening our relationship with Krishna, with God. That is the only solution. So in this material world where everyone is trying so hard to make a permanent settlement, to make a peaceful situation, to make a perfect solution, our attempts are always foiled. purposefully. The material world again is specifically set up to foil our attempts so that we take shelter of Krishna, understanding that it is to no avail our attempt for perfection in the material world is to no avail. It can't possibly work. We can try a billion times and it won't work. And we may think, well, maybe the billionth and first time I'll be successful. And that's the way we basically do think. Next time, if I just adjust this or just make this change or think more positively or whatever, then it'll all work. But actually one has to come to grips with reality, that the very nature of the material world, it prohibits the true happiness and satisfaction that we all long for. So now, Indra and the demigods have taken shelter of Vishwarup, who has guided them as priest to take shelter of Lord Narayan, and by that combination, potent combination, they have defeated the demons, the asuras. Now in the next chapter, we shall read what happens next. Sukadeva Goswami continued, he's narrating to Maharaj Prakrit. Vishwarupa, who was engaged as the priest of the demigods, had three heads. He used one to drink the beverage Somarasa, another to drink wine, and the third to eat food. O King Prakrit, thus I have heard from authorities. Here's Prabhupada's purport to that verse. One cannot directly perceive the kingdom of heaven, its king, and its other inhabitants, or how they perform their various engagements, for no one can go to the heavenly planets. Although modern scientists have invented many powerful space vehicles, they cannot even go to the moon, not to speak of other planets. By direct experience, one cannot learn anything beyond the range of human perception. One must hear from authorities. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, a great personality, says, what I am describing to you, O King, is what I have heard from authoritative sources. This is the Vedic system. The Vedic knowledge is called Shruti because it must be received by being heard from authorities. It is beyond the realm of our false experimental knowledge. So this is out of this simple few words of Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prakrit, he's explaining the Vedic source of knowledge. Or Prabhupada takes advantage of that to expand upon it further, to explain how knowledge is actually achieved through the Vedic system. It is called deductive knowledge, not inferential knowledge, but deductive. It is derived from higher authority. So very, very different from the Western system. The Western system is ascending inferential knowledge based on, the Sanskrit word is anuman, as a praman. Praman means a proof. Everything that is accepted in the Western culture is accepted by this inferential knowledge, sensual knowledge, or pratyaksha, or the knowledge based on what we can see and hear. And if people can't see it and hear it and touch it, they won't accept it. Although everyone knows there is so much delusion upon what we see. In fact, if there's an accident or something like that that unfortunately occurs, and you ask 15 people what happened, you'll get 15 different responses. Because everyone is living more or less in their own bubble of reality or illusion. If everyone has their own reality, that is practically the definition of illusion or delusion. So an outside source is required for agreed upon knowledge, an outside pramana or proof system, And that is called Shruti Praman, or Shabda Praman. The Praman, or the proof based on transcendental sound or by hearing of the Vedic literatures. So Sukadev Goswami is saying that which he is saying now about Vishwarup and his three heads, he has heard from authoritative sources, from Shruti. This is Shastric. So therefore, aside from the fact that we have not seen anyone with three heads, and it sounds so fantastic to us, yet he's saying it should be accepted because what we have seen isn't all of reality. And on the other side, that the Vedic scriptures and the holy person said that this person does exist. So according to the Vedic system, one should accept that and not accept the false experimental knowledge based on inference, pratyaksha, direct experience, and inferences made from that direct experience. Because we see that what is accepted today is not accepted tomorrow. And that which is taught in the school systems 50 years ago seems so primitive today, and 40 years ago, and 30 years ago, and 20 years ago even. The curriculum changes every few years. That which was true is now considered false. So why put our trust in that type of experimental knowledge? It's that type of knowledge which is going to prove itself false in such a short time. Rather, the Vedic knowledge is accepted as true in the past. It's accepted by those who accept the Vedic system. It's true in the present, and they'll accept the same thing is true in the future. That is called hearing from authorities. So Prabhupada is just making that point in the first verse about Vishwarup and his three heads, and with each of his heads he would do something different. Second verse. Omaraj Prikit. The demigods were related to Vishwarup from his father's side, and that's Tvasta. And therefore, he visibly offered clarified butter in the fire while chanting mantras, such as Indraya Idam Svaha. This is meant for King Indra. And Idam Agnaye. This is for the demigod of fire, Agni. He loudly chanted these mantras and offered each of the demigods his proper share. So the system was, when Vishwarup would perform the sacrifices, he would offer ghee to the sacrificial fire. And in this way, he would strengthen the demigods one by one using the mantras, using specific mantras which would offer different ghee or whatever to the strengthen it to the demigods according to the Vedic system. Although offering clarified butter in the sacrificial fire in the name of the demigods, without the knowledge of the demigods, he also offered oblations to the demons because they were his relatives through his mother. So Vishwarup is about to get himself into trouble because he's supporting both sides in a war. Purport. Because of Vishwarup's affection for the families of both the demigods and the demons, because his father was on the demigod side, the Brahmin side, and his mother was the daughter of Diti, who was the mother of all the demons. So without the knowledge of the demigods, he also offered oblations to the demons because they were relatives to his mother. Once upon a time, however, the king of heaven, Indra, understood that Vishwarup was secretly cheating the demigods by offering oblations on behalf of the demons. So how do you think Indra felt about that? That his priest was supporting the demons as well as his own party. So he was very, very, very upset. He became extremely afraid And that was the cause of his being upset, because he was strengthening the demons. He was being afraid of being defeated by the demons. And in great anger at Vishwaroop, he cut Vishwaroop's 3 heads from his shoulders. So he did a very heavy thing, abominable thing. He killed this pious Brahmana. And not only was Vishwaroop a pious Brahmana, but he was acting as the spiritual master, a priest of Indra. And yet, out of his anger, based on what? Based on fear. In the material world, everyone is always afraid. Afraid of what? Afraid of losing what we have and not getting what we think we need. And therefore, everyone is always in anxiety. And the spiritual world means, or a name for the spiritual world is Vaikuntha, which means the place where there is no anxiety. And why is there no anxiety there? Because there is no fear there. And why is there no fear? Because everyone is fully surrendered to the Lord. And when one is fully surrendered to the Lord, there is never any fear. But it is not easy to be fully surrendered to the Lord. It's not cheap. One has to give himself completely, surrender. Sarvadamam pratyaja mame kam sharanam raja. Ham tvam sarva papebhyo. I will protect you from all reactions. Mokshishami. And I will free you from all reactions. Masucha, do not fear, do not hesitate, do not worry. So it takes that type of deep relationship with Krishna to surrender oneself fully to Him. Experienced relationship. So Indra was terrified, angry, afraid, and he cut off Vishwaroop's 3 heads. Thereafter, the head, and they were, because he was so potent, those heads turned into different types of birds. The head meant for drinking somaras was transformed into a kapinjal, a particular type of partridge bird. Similarly, the head meant for drinking wine was transformed into a kalavinka, a sparrow. And the head meant for eating food became a titri, a common partridge. There is one Upanishad called the Taittiriya Upanishad, which means something to do with the portrait. Although Indra was so powerful that he could neutralize the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana, he killed Vishwaroop, and there was a reaction for that. He repentantly accepted the burden of these reactions with folded hands. He could have neutralized it, but he accepted it. He suffered for 1 year. And then to purify himself, he distributed the reactions for the sinful killing amongst the earth, water, trees, and women. In return for King Indra's benediction, the ditches in the earth would be filled automatically. The land accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions for killing a Brahmana. Because of those sinful reactions, we find many deserts on the surface of the earth. Prabhupada's short purport. Because deserts are manifestations of the earth's disease condition, no auspicious ritualistic ceremonies can be performed in a desert. Persons destined to live in deserts are understood to be sharing the reactions for the sin of Brahmahatya, the killing of a Brahmana. Text 8. In return for Indra's benediction that their branches and twigs would grow back when trimmed, the trees accepted 1/4 of the reactions for killing a Brahmana. These reactions are visible in the flowing of sap from trees, therefore one is forbidden to drink this sap. In return for Lord Indra's benediction that they would be able to enjoy lusty desires continuously, even during pregnancy, for as long as sex is not injurious to the embryo, women accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. As a result of those reactions, women manifested the signs of menstruation every month. And in return for King Indra's benediction, that water would increase the volume of other substances with which it was mixed, water accepted 1/4 of the sinful reactions. Therefore, there are bubbles and foam in water. When one collects water, these should be avoided. Prabhupada's short purport. If water is mixed with milk, fruit juice, or other similar substances, it increases their volume, and no one can understand which has increased. In return for this benediction, water accepted 1/4 of Indra's sinful reactions. These sinful reactions are visible in foam and bubbles. Therefore, one should avoid foam and bubbles while collecting drinking water. After Vishwarupa was killed, his father, Tvastha, performed ritualistic ceremonies to kill Indra. So this is the nature of what happens in the world. One person kills another, and then those dear to that other conspire to kill the killer. And in this way, hatred develops and feuds develop between families and nations and communities, and killing after killing and killing go on. So Tvastha, even though so exalted, he performed ritualistic ceremonies to kill Indra. He offered oblations in the sacrificial fire, saying, "O enemy of Indra, flourish to kill your enemy without delay." So he was creating, he wanted to create someone who would be the enemy, who would be Indra's, whose enemy would be Indra. He wanted to create a being so powerful who would think of Indra as his enemy, and thereby retaliate against Indra for Indra's having killed, this is Tvastha, having killed his son Vishwarup for no reason. So he wanted retaliation. So he, using his own power, brahminical power, he created a great sacrificial fire and was chanting these mantras. "O enemy of Indra, flourish to kill your enemy without delay." Here's Prabhupada's purport. There was some defect in Tvastha's chanting of the mantra because he chanted it long instead of short. So in mantras have to, Vedic mantras have to be pronounced exactly perfectly for it to have its desired effect. Otherwise, the effects will be incorrect or different from what one expected. Sometimes they can be exactly opposite of what one expected and wanted. So Tvastha, there was supposed to be a short sound, and instead he pronounced it long, and it changed. Tvastha intended to chant the word Indra Shatro, meaning "O enemy of Indra." In this mantra, the word Indra is in the possessive case, Shashti, and the words Indra Shatro is called a Tatpurusha compound, Tatpurusha Samas. Unfortunately, instead of chanting the mantra short, Tvastha chanted it long, Indra Shatro, instead of Indra Shatro. So the meaning of what he was chanting changed. So Tvastha chanted it long, Indra, and its meaning changed from the enemy of Indra, someone who was going to think of Indra as his enemy, to Indra, who is an enemy. So Indra became the object. Or Indra became... Indra... the meaning is that it came out, one who is the enemy, one whose enemy is Indra. So, consequently, instead of an enemy of Indra's, there emerged from the body Vichasura, whom Indra was the enemy. So Indra, thought of Vitrasura, who was coming as his enemy, and he wanted it, Tvastha actually wanted it the other way. But in any case, so in text 12, from the southern side of the sacrificial fire, known as Anvaharanya, came a fearful personality, but his mentality wasn't exactly as Tvastha had wanted. Came a fearful personality who looked like the destroyer of the entire creation at the end of the millennium. Like arrows released in the four directions, the demon's body grew day after day. Tall and blackish, he appeared like a burnt hill and was as lustrous as a bright array of clouds in the evening. The hair on the demon's body and his beard and mustaches were the color of melted copper, and his eyes were piercing like the midday sun. He appeared unconquerable, as if holding the three worlds on the points of his blazing trident. Dancing and shouting with a loud voice, he made the entire surface of the earth tremble as if from an earthquake. As he yawned again and again, he seemed to be trying to swallow the whole sky with his mouth, which was as deep as a cave. He seemed to be licking up all the stars in the sky with his tongue and eating the entire universe with his long, sharp teeth. Seeing this gigantic demon, everyone in great fear ran here and there in all directions. That very fearful demon, who was actually the son of Tvastha, covered all the planetary systems by dint of austerities. Therefore, he was named Vitra, one who covers everything. So this demon was created by Tvastha. He was huge and so powerful, and he terrified everyone. So we can see how the nature of the material world is really exemplified in Indra's actions. He did something incorrect by insulting his spiritual master, Brihaspati. He became afraid. He got into trouble. The demons attacked him. And then to mitigate that problem, he went to Brahma, who sent him to Vishwarup. And then that didn't, even though that helped in some ways, it didn't exactly fulfill exactly what he wanted, so he killed Vishwarup, causing another problem. And here the personification of his problem created by Tvastha has appeared before him, and he terrified Indra. So what do you think he did? Indra did. The demigods, text 19, headed by Indra, charged the demon with their soldiers. So they immediately attacked. Even before Vitrasura could attack them, they attacked Vitrasura. So they struck him with their own divya bows, their transcendental bows and arrows and other weapons. But Vitrasura swallowed all their weapons. Struck with wonder and disappointment, so their plan to destroy Vitrasura didn't work. What would they do next? Struck with wonder and disappointment upon seeing the strength of the demon, the demigods lost their own strength. Therefore, they all met together to try to please the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of God in Narayan, by worshipping him. They had no more priests to go to, so they went directly to the Lord, and they came together and began to pray to the Lord and recite prayers. For what purpose? For protection. So this is the difference, practically speaking, by one who has God, of one who has a godly temperament, like these demigods, and one who has an asuric or demonic temperament. Everyone in the material world on both sides gets into difficulties. But those who are sukritina, who are pious, when in difficulty, they take shelter of the Lord. So that's just what the demigods did. So here's their, so there's from 21 to 27 their prayers. Should we read all that tonight? Yeah, we'll try. So here's their first prayer. The demigod said, "The three worlds are created by the five elements, namely ether, air, fire, water, and earth, which are controlled by various demigods. So the world has component parts, and those component parts are controlled by the demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. And the demigods themselves are controllers of the different elements. Being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates." Because at a different time, at different times, one is supposed to do different things. So time in that sense is dictating one's work. According to the Vedic scriptures, everything is delineated, the work that is done at different times, different seasons. At different seasons even, in the Brahmins would bathe in a particular way and they'd recite different mantras and everyone would do things according to the particular times as mentioned in the Vedic scriptures. So in that sense, time was dictating to them what they would do. So everyone was trying to appease time because time can be very kind to us. Good times, and then time can be very heavy with us and give us heavy, bad times. So, trying to appease the time factor, everyone performs their prescribed duties. The time factor himself, however, the demigods continue, is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the time is actually a shakti or an energy of the Paramatma, or the Supreme Lord. So although time is running everything in this world, the Lord is running time. Therefore, time being under the control of the Lord, being afraid of the Lord, they're saying, now the demigods are saying, so therefore, let us now worship that Supreme Lord who alone can give us full protection. So this is the conclusion that they're reaching. They're very expert at becoming very philosophical in times of distress. We'll read half of Prabhupada's purport here. The demigods, being afraid of death, the time factor had come to them in the form of Vritrasura, took shelter of the Lord and offered him these prayers. Although the time factor is fearful to everyone, fear personified is afraid of the Supreme Lord, who is therefore known as Abhaya, fearless. Taking shelter of the Supreme Lord brings actual fearlessness, and therefore the demigods decided to take shelter of the Lord. Of course, they were terrified of this Vritrasura. Free from all material conceptions of existence, and never wonderstruck by anything, the Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by His own perfection. He has no material designations, and therefore He is steady and unattached. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog. So the demigods are saying, we are taking shelter of the Lord. He is the only one, really, who everyone should take shelter of. And trying to take shelter of another, other than the Supreme Lord, is like what? What's the example used? Quite an amazing example. Did you ever see dogs swim in the ocean? They jump in, You see the people with the sticks sometimes or a ball, and they'll throw the ball in a few feet into the water, and the dog jumps in and goes, does his dog paddle, and he grabs the ball in his teeth and he brings it out to the master and drops it at his feet. But the dog can only swim out a few feet or a few meters. He can't swim the entire ocean. He's so limited. So taking shelter of anyone other than the Lord is taking shelter of someone who's limited. Comparing that shelter to watching the dog swim and grabbing hold of his tail as if he's going to carry us by his strength, the dog's strength going to carry us across the ocean. Purport. A dog can swim in the water, but if a dog dives in the ocean and someone wants to cross the ocean by holding the dog's tail, he's certainly fool number one. A dog cannot cross the ocean, nor can a person cross the ocean by catching a dog's tail. Similarly, one who desires to cross the ocean of nations should not seek the shelter of any demigod or anyone else, but the fearless shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.58 therefore says, Samasritaye palapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya shomurari bhavam buddhir vachapadam param padam 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 yad vipadam natesham. The Lord's lotus feet are an indestructible boat. And if one takes shelter of that boat, he can easily cross the ocean of nations. So that this is bhavam buddhir, this ocean of bhava, of birth and death. It shrinks when one takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. That great ocean shrinks to vatsapada, the size of the water that fills a calf's hoofprint. And one will easily cross on the boat of the Lord's lotus feet, cross to the other side and go to the spiritual world. So the ocean shrinks in size, the vast unlimited ocean shrinks in size, and one can easily cross. Consequently, there are no dangers for a devotee, although he lives within this material world, which is full of dangers at every step. Padam padam yat vipadam natesham. There are no dangers, even though the world is full of dangers. When one has fully taken shelter of the Lord, because the Lord is fearless, he too becomes fearless. So one should seek the shelter of the all-powerful, instead of trying to be protected by one's own concocted ideas. Seek the shelter of the all-powerful. How else could one be fully protected unless one is protected by the one who is all-powerful? If he doesn't have all power, how can he give us full protection? So now there are some examples that the demigods give of the Lord's protection. Huge examples. Examples of universal proportion, which makes what they're asking for seem very small and insignificant and easy to fulfill. Text 23. The Manu, named Satyavrata, formally saved himself by tying the small boat of the entire world to the horn of the Matsya Avatar, the fish incarnation. So this will be explained later in the Bhagavatam. Perhaps in the 12th canto. No, was it the 9th canto? What canto is it? By the grace of the Matsya Avatar, Manu saved himself from the great danger of the flood. May that same fish incarnation save us from the great and fearful danger caused by the son of Tvasta. So the whole world was saved by this, by the fish incarnation, Matsya. So a huge example, and another huge example. In the beginning of creation, a tremendous wind caused fierce waves of inundating water. The great waves made such a horrible sound that Lord Brahma almost fell from his seat on the lotus into the water of devastation, but he was saved with the help of the Lord. Thus, we also expect the Lord to protect us from this dangerous condition. So the waters of universal devastation were so terrifying. The waters of devastation that Matsya saved Manu from was so terrifying. And Lord Indra is now saying, you please protect us. Text 25. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created us by His external potency, and by whose mercy we expand the creation of the universe, is always situated before us as the Supersoul. So He is the Creator, and by His potency, we expand the creation of the universe, the demigods are saying. And this is also true for us, that He is the ultimate creator, and by His power we can act within this material world. If He withdraws His power, whatever powers we have completely vanish immediately. Whatever powers we have, strength, intelligence, beauty, wealth, in a second, all vanquished if He withdraws them. He is always, that Lord is always situated before us as the Supersoul, but we cannot see His form. This is our situation. The Lord is always there, but we cannot see Him. We are unable to see Him. Why? Because all of us think that we are separate and independent gods. The demigods are saying this, and this is very true for ourselves. We think we are separate, we think ourselves separate and independent gods of our own little universe, our own little realms. Because usually, what stops us from taking full shelter of God, of the Lord, is that we want to see Him before we'll place our trust in Him. But He's there. He's created us. Where did we come from? Suddenly, we awaken at some time in our life, and here we are in a particular body, and the world is here, and everything seems to have been, is just going on. But where did it all come from? Where did we come from? And in a second, everything can be withdrawn. So we'd like to see the Lord so we can sense His existence. But we can't see Him because of flaws in our own consciousness. And the flaw in our consciousness is we think we're self-separate from Him, independent from Him, and Lord of our own universe. And we think we are the center of our own little universe and that things should be revolving around us. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Short purport. Here's an explanation of why the conditioned soul cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Even though the Lord appears before us as Lord Krishna or Lord Ramachandra and lives in human society as a leader or king, the conditioned soul cannot understand Him. Avajananti mam mudha manushyam tanamashritam. Rascals, mudhas, deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking Him an ordinary human being. Very interesting point Prabhupada is making. That even if Krishna was right before us, as Lord Krishna, as Lord Ramachandra, still we would not recognize Him. So seeing Him, having Him be here right before us is insufficient for us to see Him, because the flaw isn't in that He's not here. The problem is in our consciousness. So, avajananti mam mudha, Krishna says, manushyam tanamashrita, thinking, would think that the Lord is an ordinary human being. However insignificant we are, we think that we are also God. That we can create a universe or that we can create another God. This is why we cannot see or understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, Lingameva Pashyama Kadachid Abhimanastu Devanam Apisaniva Prayakaleshunasjeva Taratam Yena Sopitu. We are all conditioned to various degrees, but we think that we are God. This is why we can not understand who God is or see Him face to face. We think ourselves separated. Our self-conception is separated from the Lord, independent and separate from Him. And we have our own self-constructed universe in which we are the center, in which we expect everything to go according to our plans. And this is the frustration, that everyone feels frustrated because the world simply doesn't turn according to the way we want. And why doesn't it? Because you have 6 billion people all thinking that it should be going the way that they want. And that what they want is all conflicting with each other. So of course it's a frustrating world. A frustrating world where everyone lives in their own universe, thinking they're independent, thinking they're separate from the Lord, and thinking the world, that they are the central character, and the whole thing should revolve around me. No wonder everyone is frustrated and unhappy, and practically speaking, mad, because this is the definition of madness. Certainly the world doesn't revolve around us. So we may not think that we're God in the sense of creating I've made the sun rise today, and the moon today is going to be like this, and now it's time for the flowers to blossom. We may not think of ourselves as God in that way, although some people perhaps are so crazy that they do. But we do think ourselves of God as if we were the center of everything. This is why we cannot actually see the Lord, even though He's present. Text 26-27, the last verses we'll read today, and there's a purport by Prabhupada. By His inconceivable internal potency, spiritual potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into various transcendental bodies as Vamanadeva, the incarnation of strength amongst the demigods, Parsaram, the incarnation among saints, Nisringadev and Varaha, incarnations amongst animals, and Matsya and Kurma, incarnations among aquatics. He accepts various transcendental bodies among all types of living entities, and among human beings He especially appears as Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. By His causeless mercy, He protects the demigods, who are always harassed by the demons. He is the supreme worshipable deity of all living entities. He is the supreme cause, represented as the male and female creative energies. Although different from this universe, He exists in His universal form, Virat Rup. In our fearful condition, let us take shelter of Him, for we are sure that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Soul, will give us His protection. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So the Lord incarnates in every species. He's the cause of all causes. He's the Prakriti, the female energy, the Purusha, the living entities. All these are different potencies of the Lord. Chit Shakti, Maya Shakti, Jiva Shakti. All these are different potencies of the Lord. They're His potencies, and He is the source of all the potencies. So who is better to give protection? Who is it better to take shelter of than the source of all potencies? Purport. In this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is ascertained to be the original cause of creation. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary Bhavartha Dipika, replies to the idea that Prakriti and Purusha are the causes of the cosmic manifestation. As stated here, Param Pradana Purusham Vishram Anya, He is the supreme cause, represented as the male and female creative energies. Although different from this universe, he exists in his universal form, Bharata Rupa. So he is everywhere and everything through his energy. But yet, he himself is different and separate. In the same way that heat and light are energies of a fire, energies of the sun for that matter, but yet the fire and the sun exist separately from the heat and the light, which are their energies. The word Prakriti, which is used to indicate the source of generation, refers to the material energy of the Supreme Lord. And the word Purusha refers to the living entities, who are the superior energies of the Lord. Both the Prakriti and Purusha ultimately enter the Supreme Lord, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakritim Yanti Mamekam. Although Prakriti and Purusha specifically appear to be the causes of the material manifestation, everything that we see around, everything that we see around is a combination of Prakriti and Purusha, material energy and spiritual energy, so it appears that the material and spiritual energy is the cause of everything, that life and matter is the cause of everything that we see. Both are emanations of different energies of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the cause of Prakriti and Purusha. He is the original cause, Sarva Karana Karanam. The Naradiya Purana says, Avikaropi Parama Prakritistu Vikarani Anuprivishya Govinda Prakritis Chabidiyate. Both the Prakriti and Purusha, which are inferior and superior energies, are emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, in that first sloka of this chapter where Prabhupada said this is the Vedic system, in his purport to that sloka, this is the Vedic system, we accept the Shruti or the Vedic scriptures as authoritative, and this is where we get our knowledge from. Here Prabhupada is quoting those very same Vedic scriptures to say, yes, there is energy in this world. There is the material energy, there is the spiritual energy, there's life. But those are not the ultimate. They come from the Lord. So he is the ultimate cause of all causes. So it's not just Prabhupada saying that, it's the Vedic scriptures, which are the source of knowledge, that also say that. They emanate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if this whole material realm with its and the billions of living entities in this one earth all emanate from the Lord, how powerful he must be. Because a huge, huge amount of heat and light don't emanate from a small fire. When there's a huge, huge fire, then great heat comes and great light comes. So similarly, when such powerful energies come from the Lord, how powerful he must be. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, Gama Visha, the Lord enters the Prakriti, and then the Prakriti creates different manifestations. The Prakriti, or the material energy, is not independent or beyond his energies. Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, is the original cause of everything. Therefore, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham savasya prabhavo mata savam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.33, the Lord also says, Aham mevasam eva gre, only I existed before the creation. This is confirmed in the Brahmanda Purana as follows, Smriti avyavadanena prakritit tvam iti stiti. Udbayatmaka suttevad vasudeva parapumam prakriti purushasteti shabdareko abhidiyate. To generate the universe, the Lord acts indirectly as the Purusha and directly as the Prakriti. Because both energies emanate from Lord Vasudeva, the all-pervasive Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is known as both Prakriti and Purusha. Therefore, Vasudeva is the cause of everything. Sarva Karana Karana. So the demigods are requesting the Lord for protection. And upon hearing their sincere requests, He will come. And will Krishna allows speak of that tomorrow. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
The fairness, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I reward you as you surrender. Is that similar?
Say that again, the fearlessness?
Yeah. Is that similar? Fearlessness, as you surrender, we become more fearless?
If we surrender, we become fearless. And if we think about surrender as occurring in degrees, the more we surrender, the more fearless we become, clearly. Just like if you were going around town and if your father was the richest, most powerful person in the town, and everyone knew who you were and who he was, then what would you have to worry about in the town? No one would cause you trouble. Everyone would say, "Hey, Dale, come over here. We want to give you something. Come on over." They'd take care of you. So you'd walk around with your head held high, fearlessly, just naturally fearlessly, because of your relationship with that all-powerful father of yours. So our problem, basically, is that we forget our relationship with our father. We've forgotten it, like amnesia. So he's always trying to wake us up and remind us of that fact. So the more we wake up to who we are, and who we are means in relationship with him. It's like we have a name. Your name is Dale. But that's not your only name. You have a surname as well. And that surname is your father's name. So who you are, even though we call you Dale, who you are, if you were actually saying who you are, it's always in relationship to your father. Your full name tells you and everyone else who you are, but it's also in relationship to your father. So who we are is also in relationship to ours. Supreme Father, Krishna. So a partial understanding of who we are it will give us partial fearlessness. But a full understanding gives us complete fearlessness. Because we're under His protection, His promise. Declare it boldly, Kanteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Panashati. Krishna tells Arjuna, declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. So to deeply realize that is the most wonderful thing. It is the greatest gift that we can have received and the greatest gift we can give another. Because the greatest problem in this world is fearfulness. Defending. There's so much defending that goes on. Because everyone is so afraid. And what are they afraid of? There's billions of things to be afraid of, whether it's diseases or taxes or someone who doesn't like us or thieves or getting cheated or mugged or whatever, or traffic or accidents or so many things to be afraid of. And ultimately everyone's afraid of death. So we're learning from the demigods what to do when we get hit by fear. We should take shelter of this source of all protection, the greatest source of the Prakriti Purusha, source of our own power. We shouldn't think that we're God and rely on our own abilities to give us protection. We should take shelter of Krishna. That's the point. So they prayed to the Lord, and now he appears, and we'll hear about that if Krishna knows tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.